Hi, my name is David Lankus. Hi, thank you. It's an honor to be invited. And I, as Scott and I were saying, I think that given the time, I'll cut out the second hour of my remarks because, as he pointed out, one in three just work fine on their own. So I was also planning on wearing my robes here today for two reasons. One, because I paid so much for them, and I only get to wear them three times a year, which would be commencement, graduation, and Halloween. But, Daddy, are you going to be a wizard again? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. But also because many people don't, this is a day of ceremony and symbols and circumstance, and many people don't necessarily know the tradition that goes with
these fabulous robes. All right, so I will pull them out of these. You know, one is that, of course, they're monastic in order, right? These are what the monks used to wear. And back when they were the medieval teachers, yeah, I will put it on. And the other, though, that many people don't understand is that this is the hoods that, they would wear as they were traveling around teaching and such. And actually, Ken Lavender had to point out to me at one point that not only are they the hoods to keep the rain off your head, but if you've ever wondered what this stupid part of it is, this is where they kept the bread. This is where I kept the supplies. So as they would travel, they would have it with them. And you know, what's interesting, of course, is today that's an appropriate symbol because it is about a journey. And at one hand, we are signifying the end of a journey coming through the academic program, but of course, we're really indicating the beginning of a professional journey. You guys are not only indoctrinated into an honor society, but you're also indoctrinated into a profession with a very rich history and a very, very important mission, a very powerful mission, and I think more and more relevant as we go forward. So that's where the not done yet part, right? This is my last whack as professor at you before you go out. And as we all know, that the number one, the person who really set the bar and structure for giving these sort of commencement-like address was Dr. Seuss. All right. How many people got this either this year or a previous graduation? Right? A couple? Yeah? I got this for when I got my doctorate from my parents. I think it might have been an indication of how they felt about my academic rigor, but right, so, if you don't know the story, it's pretty much, go for it, and sometimes life's going to suck, but that's okay, it'll get better, or sometimes it won't, and then it'll get better, and sometimes, because Dr. Seuss was a happy, happy man in all times. And so I thought what I would do briefly is talk about some of the traps that, as I've traveled around, I think you may encounter. And so these are traps, I think, inherent in our field, and I think that one of the things you need to know as the new folks is that you are going to be given the pressure of solving them. And so the first trap that I would warn you about is the trap of reductionism. That a lot of the field has been about taking really complex things in the world and breaking them down into smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller chunks until we can make sense of them or until we know what shelf to put them on. And reductionism isn't just a factor of the librarianship. One could look at academia, where the general rule of thumb for academic success is divide lake until biggest fish in it you are. I don't just do library science, I do reference. I don't just do reference, I do virtual reference. I don't do virtual, I do systems in virtual. In fact, Commodore 64 doing virtual reference, I am a world leader in that field. And so we tend to look at this, right? This is, if for all the fun folks out there, in management literature, Max Weber talking about bureaucracy and the idea that we break things down. And one of the things that I put up here, and Barbara Krawczyk's giving me an evil eye or will soon, you probably like the idea of seducing people with information organization.
They do it to
themselves. They do. When I teach, Meg, who was in my class, remembers the line that I was teaching at doctoral seminars, that information organization is really the crack of librarianship. It's something where if you take it seriously and you take an area and you break it down and you can get immersed and amazingly complex in how you build taxonomies and ontologies. I mean, you look at whole fields dealing with things like RDF triples and triple stores and how we handle metadata and one-to-one correlations. And what happens is, if you forget why you started that process, which was to make sense of something or to make it easier to find, you can find yourself hours and days and months into a task before you realize what you're doing is shifting things around. You're not necessarily making them any easier to find or more useful, but you're entertaining yourself with the puzzle of how you break the world down. And so it's, that's not to say the information organization bad. It's simply to say that sometimes, as a field, we've taken this important task and turned it into a lifestyle, and we need to worry out, because libraries, in many ways, have become trapped in our own labyrinth of tools and organizations, right? So, you know, between MARC and AACR2 and DDC and LCSH and C3950 and ISO, right, we have more acronyms than any techie could ever want, right? But if you look at the organizations that we have, right, well, we have the international body that's broken into the national body, which is broken into the regional body, which is broken into the state body, which is broken into the smaller state body, which is, and we keep dividing things out. I remember I was giving some speeches at a virtual reference desk conference, and we were asking how could it get better. So Abby's here, Pauline's here, and people had to live through that. And they came up and said, "What we need is we need to break the program down by academic libraries, by school libraries, by special libraries." And we all sort of on the organizing committee looked back at them and said, "No, we refuse." Because it's your job to take it back and make it apply in your world. But the point is that as librarians, we need to be looking at what holds us together, not by our differences in disciplines. So I warn you that as you move forward, you're going to be in a world that has been very successful by breaking things into small chunks. And I would tell you, though, that the true matter of success is making things make sense. Not making things organized, but making them relevant. And oftentimes that means embracing a world of chaos and craziness. And the idea that we want to make it simple for our users sometimes means we need to make things more complex for ourselves, but sometimes that complexity simply comes from moving chairs around on the deck of the Titanic. Next trap I would warn you about is the trap of memory. We are a profession, right? The standing joke is that we are the second oldest profession. We helped organize the client list of the first oldest profession. depending on where you want to start counting, the classic one is the Library of Alexandria that we can go back to. And we sort of have this wonderful tradition that we bring through years, but sometimes it creates this sort of crust of tradition that you have to be worried about that person, that organization, that thing that where any innovation is met with trying to find an historical precedent, right? And so the joke is that, you know, we want to try blogging, we can't blogging. There's always someone in the committee, and they will always begin with the phrase, "What you have to remember is," right? So you say, well, let's try blogging. Well, what you have to remember is that we tried it in 1932, and it didn't work. And you're saying blogging, 1930. Yes, we used slate tablets, we used chalk. It rained, they would wash them down. It was a complete failure, so we shouldn't ever do it again. We have come from a tradition, and that tradition is important, but that tradition is far from sacrosanct. But if you learn anything about Melville Dewey, you should learn that he made great contributions to the field, but at the same time was kind of a misogynist anti-Semite. That the Dewey Decimalist System is wonderful until you look at that whole religion section when it gets broken down by this Christian text, this Christian area, this Christian, and everything else. That maybe this indicates something that we should look at and revise and think about again. So Israeli Zangwill, I love this quote, which is that the past is our cradle, not our prison. There's danger as well as appeal and its glamour. The past is for inspiration, not imitation, for continuation, not repetition. You are going to go into institutions with literally, in some cases, centuries of history. And what you need to worry about is not living up to the centuries of history, but to make sure that what you do is the centuries to come. So be careful of memory. The next one is the trap of artifacts. And the trap of artifacts is, the logic goes something like this. I got a bunch of stuff. I add them to a bunch of stacks. I sprinkle a little information organization on it. And I get a library out the end. Right? Now, this leads to a functional definition of librarianship, which goes something like this. That as we get more stuff, as we get more books, we must inventory them. We can't just lay them in piles. That as that inventory gets larger and larger, we need to divide them and classify so that we can find them. That classification is not something simple. People aren't born speaking in, you know, Boolean logic. So we need to classify. And that's a professional activity. Large classification and inventories require automation. Automation leads to standards or leads to networks. Networks require standards. This is a functional relationship which I'm hoping you didn't hear too much while you're here, because what it says is it's all about the stuff. It's all about the things. And that's not what this is. This is the part that you are, but you're not a cog in a wheel. The other thing that you see it, and it's insidious, you see it in the latest ALA core competencies. If you read through the core competencies, you will find the most dreaded, horrific, horrible phrase ever devised by this field, which is recorded knowledge. Recorded knowledge is an oxymoron. You can't record knowledge. Knowledge is something inherently human. It sits in your head. It's like talking about intelligent rock, right? If you take a rock and you hand it to an archaeologist and it has ideograms on it, such an archaeologist can read it. You hand it to a geologist. They can tell you where it was formed, where it was created, how it was done. They're reading the rock. But the point is the rock didn't tell them how to do it. They're bringing that to the item. Knowledge is something we develop, yes, with the use of artifacts and materials, and they produce artifacts and materials, but it's not resident within those artifacts and materials. We have to realize that they are of use and utility and tools. But just like dentists are associated with drills, we don't want librarians to become associated with our tools. We want them to understand our ultimate value and worth, which is not the things, but in knowledge. That's the job we're in. The lamp burning in the front is about knowledge, not about recorded knowledge, not about artifacts and items. We are the ones who bring and facilitate knowledge, which leads to the trap of bibliofundamentalism. I love this phrase. This was a Karen Schneider phrase. And it's the idea that there are some people who will mask this by talking about things like bibliographic instruction still. We'll talk about things like marketing. Well, what's wrong with the library? Library is perfect if only people would come see us. Well, what that means is they don't get it. But if they're the ones we're serving, who doesn't get it in this equation? Ann Lippo once said, we must remember that it is not the user who is remote from us, but us from the user. We need to understand that the idea here is of service and to be there. And things like, you know, Raghunathan's Five Laws of Books. I love Raghunathan. But if he were writing 300 years before, would he have talked about books, or if you read 500 years ago. His laws work very well if you talk about every scroll its reader, every reader its scroll. Right? He didn't sit there and go, before books, this, you know, today he'd probably talk about every website for a user and every user website. We can't become so immersed in the tools and the technology of the day that we forget that our ultimate goal is education. This is the big one, and we don't hear it too much anymore, but it's still out there. Well, it's a library school versus an information school. If you've kept up with what Rutgers did in their name change, it's like violence going on in New Jersey these days. And what we need to understand is this is not a useful debate, right? On one hand, you have a library. On the other hand, an informationatorium, right? They're not corresponding items. Librarians need to know about information science and marketing and economics and psychology and human resources. Information scientists need to understand what we've learned in information organization and building corpora and service. But they're not the same thing. We need to move away from these debates of L versus I and realize that it's not about information and it's not about libraries as buildings. It's about knowledge and learning. It's about we should get into the K and L debate and not the L and I debate. The trap of visionaries. Now, I'm always loath to bring this slide up because it ultimately applies to me in a very non-positive way. Beware of visionaries without reality. Beware of mottos over intellectual signatures. Beware of the French revolutionary who says, there go my people, I must find out where they are going so that I may lead them. We are a profession who I love dearly, and we have some really talented people who can get up and speak loudly and passionately and pound on tables. We are a profession that is enamored with what is next and what is new. And we are a profession that, by and large, runs as a cult of personality in many ways. And what I need you to worry about with this trap is that you go to the conference and you hear the person who's pounding and doing the Baptist preacher thing, and you don't stop and ask the two most important questions you will have in your profession. Why and why not? Now, you spent a whole degree getting the why question, hopefully. Hopefully we spent a good amount of time where you've either been asked it or been asking us of it or trying to figure out why. Why do we do this? Why do we do that? Why do we do this? Now I want you to get very much into the why not question. Why not blog? Why not wiki? Why not take our items and put them embedded in communities? Why not have a public library co-located with an academic library? Why not do these things? And the visionaries can help you by inspiring you, but they can only be there for 15 minutes. You have to become ultimately your own caretaker and leader of your vision and develop your vision. The escape for the trap of the visionaries, the positive side of this is the role of mentors. So this is a good mentor of mine. Ray Vondran, who passed away a few years ago, was very much a father figure in my life. And if you don't know, what Ray taught me in terms of mentoring was two things. He taught me first that the true mentorship is wanting those you mentor to do better than yourself. And that's an amazing, rare ability to put your own ambition down for other people. To say, someday, I want to work for Meg. Right? That takes the ability to say, that's my job, is to make you guys so good that someday I work for you. That's what I want to get to, and that's true mentorship. And the other is that leadership. We use this word leadership a lot. And unfortunately, leadership is all too often translated as into a grand vision of the city on the hill and some technology skills and go for it. And what we need to realize is that leadership is one hard. Leadership is a process. Leadership is a discussion. And leadership is stewardship, not ambition. When one goes to become the supervisor, the director, what have you, it's not so you get the better parking spot. And it's not so that you get the massive new check, as all the directors in the room will tell us. It's because if you don't step up, who will? One of the things that I hear a lot, I work a lot with reference librarians, and they say, yeah, I don't think I'm going to take that promotion to supervisor because I like it here at the desk. And the question is, well, if you don't, someone who doesn't like it at the desk is going to take that job of supervising the desk. But if you don't step up to take that role, who will? And is it someone who's going to do it for ambition? One must realize that in this world where the visionaries get up and stand, it is ultimately all of our responsibilities to make it happen. Now, well, the other thing I like to say about Ray is that he really followed on Bob Taylor's lead. I mean, wonderful comments ahead of time. Bob Taylor changed the name of the school, did some amazing other things in librarianship, wrote the best article ever in our entire profession, 1968, Question Negotiation, period, enough said. Bob Taylor really put out a vision that said, if we look beyond a single institution and a single set of professionals and look wider to a whole discipline and area developing in technology and information, both that larger vision will benefit as well as our profession. And I would really argue that with Ray's tenure, particularly here at School of Information Studies, that promise was fulfilled. That you really can look around. There are more library science students now than ever before. This idea that we're running out of them is not true. That we have libraries partnering with large corporations and organizations and commingling, and we look technology, and we didn't run into the whole paperback versus hardcover debate with technology. That, I think, is amazing. I think, by the way, one of the things that it creates is an imperative upon us to negotiate the next promise. What is the next promise? What do we go beyond? The trap of invisibility. This is best phrased by the vice president of the Urban Libraries Council, who said, you know, one thing that librarians do all too well is beat the testosterone out of them. That we see too many librarians who come in with grand ideas, inspired and ready to happen, and we grind them against the stone until they give up. And this is a horrible, horrible idea. And so what you need to become are radical change agents that scare the hell out of the people who hire you, who scare the hell out of us, who on a regular basis come back and say, by the way, everything I learned in your class was brilliant. It's totally different now. This is what you need to know. And connect it. But this idea that in service, we somehow disappear. In service, in a reference conversation, we have to be unbiased. It is impossible to be unbiased. Intellectually honest is a much better phrase. That we may need to admit to our biases. That somehow, a true good librarian is one that isn't even there at the end of it. I hate, this is really tacky to pick on the motto of the organization that invites you to talk. But to be consumed in the service of others has a very diabolical sound to it, right? To say that, you know, you're in essence, it's like our patrons are black widow spiders after mating. They come to our desk and they eat us when we're done, and then we disappear. To be a true facilitator, to be a true steward, to be a true leader, is to have an opinion and have a point of view. It is ultimately to be able to set it aside for the needs of the patron, but you must be an equal participant in this conversation. To be invisible means that you see the world, how it can be better, and not act upon it, is not only unethical, it's lazy. So, the trap of invisibility is the concept that somehow you can't be an honest broker unless you are detached, unbiased, and basically invisible. That's not how it works. Think about your best teachers. From grade school on, think about the teachers who changed your life. How many of those would you define as invisible? How many of the best teachers in your life were passionate and even pissed you off half the time? That's ultimately what a good librarian does, piss you off regularly. Challenge the thinking of their community and advance the thinking of their community. A good librarian is an advocate for knowledge, an advocate who strives to make society better. So what advice, right, so now if we're going back to the whole formula, my job is to give you the bad stuff, a few of the good stuff, now I give you some words of wisdom. So here's one from the Bible, which I always think is a good place to start. Test everything, retain what is good. One of the things that you need to do as you move forward into the professions, into the areas that you are about to become part of, is to not take anything at face value. Now, that doesn't mean discard everything regardless. That's not baby out with the bathwater. It means that you must question everything you encounter and seek to improve it. Because ultimately, the mission that you are now on, that you are now part of a grand conversation of a mission where librarians are to improve society, through facilitating knowledge creation in their communities. And that community can be in a building, it could be on a desktop, it could be over the phone, it could be in schools, it can be wherever. But ultimately the mission is to improve society. And notice this is the mission of librarians. It is not the mission of a library. A library is a building to bricks and mortar. It tends not to have a mission. Best it could do is fall down. Right? It's people. It's an individual mission that we must aggregate together. It also indicates an obligation. Yes, we have an obligation as librarians of service. That yes, we must serve. That we must ultimately put our goals in the ambitions of others. Just as mentors, the best mentors are ones who prepare their mentees to be better than them, we should hope that the society gets better around us. That we also have an obligation of innovation. That we must look for new and different ways of doing it. Think about what you're doing. If libraries are about knowledge, ultimately we're about changing worldviews. We are about changing someone who comes in, and that worldview may be that little. It may be moving someone who didn't know that about Britney Spears to something that did. Or it may be moving someone from changing their entire career, finding a new job, getting out of an abusive relationship. But all of that is about change. And how can we expect a conservative, restricted organization that is mired in its own history to produce radical change? We must be innovators. We are not done yet. As a profession, we're not done yet. Next year, Scott Nicholson will sit down and try and figure out the next textbook for 511 and not find it, right? Or they'll do the next one after that. Because the only profession they've done where you can read the textbook and know everything is like scriptoriums, right? Scriveners of such dead professions. Ours change every day, and your job is to help change it. You're not done yet because the profession is not done yet, and we have an obligation of leadership to lead in that. Now, this is a piece of advice that I gave out at a conference a few years ago, and I was reminded of it when I went up to a memorial service for a dear friend of mine, Donna Dinberg, who passed away a few weeks ago. Donna Dinberg was a librarian at the National Library of Canada, and she was in the audience when I gave this, and she went back to her office, she wrote it down, and she put it up on her office, and I know that because when they were cleaning out her office, that's what they told me. And Donna is, you may not have even heard of her, but what she was an eternal optimist. She worked in an organization that went through radical change. An organization where every day I would ask her, how's life going? And she would say, fine, what's going on? Oh, they're cutting this, they're cutting this, they're cutting this. In the midst of paying her own way to ALA so that she could continue her work in genealogy. In standing up to the Library of Congress and going, no, the world does not all speak English, we have to worry about that. This was a woman who went and changed the world. And what's interesting about this advice is as I think about Donna, and I think about Ray, and I think about Bob Taylor, these were people that you are now in the company of. that you are now in their profession, that you inherit not only their legacy, but you inherit their desire to make the world a better place. That what you need to think about with Bob Taylor and Ray and your own personal heroes in this area is that they are people who sought to make the world a better place. That when you look at change, it doesn't happen from an organization. It doesn't happen from a building. Libraries don't change people's lives. Governments don't change people's lives. People change people's lives. Librarians change people's lives. You change people's lives. That's an awesome responsibility, and I don't care if you're cataloging a book or answering a question of a reference desk. That's your job. Your job every day is to go in and say, how can I make people better? How can I make society better? How can they make better choices? And ultimately, when you do that, when you embrace that, when you go into those communities, you must be brave. Because you're going to face those traps and those obstacles of people who are going to want to stop you. And people are going to stop you even if they don't know that's what they're doing. You're going to face passive aggression. You're going to face open aggression. You're going to face boards who don't get it. You're going to face patrons who don't get it. You're going to face a lot of problems. And in those problems, you must be brave. You must still speak out. You must still stand up and say, no, national security letters are a violation of the Constitution and we will not have it. No, this banned book is a form of censorship. We will not stand for it. The idea that knowledge is somehow a cold, quiet, humble pursuit is wrong. It is a passionate, raucous, froth area where we must passionately fight for its truth. And that takes bravery. That takes bravery to stand up behind a microphone. It takes bravery sometimes merely to raise your hand in a committee meeting. But that's the bravery you need to have. And you must be bold. We live in a time where we don't have the space for small ideas. We don't have the time for small ideas. I was talking to a librarian who said, this is the greatest time to be a librarian because we have no idea what's coming next. And what a great opportunity to create it. Right? The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Alan Kay. That we live in a tumultuous time where we talk about change from presidential politics to geopolitical power, and you can talk about change in your library, whether it's at the Library of Congress, whether it's at Baldwinsville Library, whether it's at Burt. This is a level of change, and we have to be bold in our understanding and invention of it. But ultimately, what comes with that bravery, what comes with that loud voice, is an obligation to be right. That we can try and we can see things, but we must understand ultimately that we know why we are doing things. Because if we are brave and if we are bold and if we get up and speak our mind and we didn't do our research or look or think or look at the data or understand the data or do real understanding of how these things fit and they fail, we fail. So blog. But don't blog because someone gets up and tells you to. Don't blog because it's the cool new thing to do. Blog because it changes someone's life. So catalog a book. But don't catalog a book because this is the process we've always done. Catalog a book because it's going to make it easier for someone to find it. And by finding it, they will improve their lives. Everything that you do every day should be around that metric. What did you do today? I changed the world. How did you do it? I went to 3 meetings that bored the hell out of me. But if I didn't go to those 3 meetings, I wouldn't have the chance to change the world. That's ultimately what we're going to be held to. And that's where people like Donna and people like Ray and people like Bob, these people stood up. And whether they did it in big, broad strokes, with Ray Vondran in big, broad strokes, or Donna Dinberg in relatively humble strokes, all of them, your brothers and sisters in this profession, all of them did it to make the world a better place. So, that is as close as I get to Dr. Seuss, but I welcome you to this profession. I look forward to having you as colleagues to torture me on a regular basis. And I ask you to take up that mission and that mantle and to help me and help your colleagues make this world a better place. Thank you.